Hey, what's up, guys? For this episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear, Skip Hill and I are joined by contest prep coach Dave Kalik. Dave has been known to work with a lot of big dudes, including a lot of pro bodybuilders, and he's here today to help answer questions that we've pulled off of the Advices Radio Facebook group. The group is new, so if you haven't joined it, definitely go check it out because that's where we're taking our questions from. So to start us out, we're going to do some Olympia predictions and talk about how we think things are going to go down, and after that, we'll go to questions. We have common mistakes that people make in prep. We'll talk about the differences in coaching on season versus off season. We'll talk about bringing out more leg detail. We'll discuss refeeding on keto and reversing off of a contest prep diet. Plus, we'll discuss Dave's thoughts on using multiple protein sources in the same meal. Guys, stay tuned for all that and a whole lot more.
Advices Radio Network.
Blood, Sweat, and Gear is for informational and educational purposes only. Kids, don't try any of this at home.
Goddamn, I'm glad y'all set it off. Used to be hard, now you just went and saw Bert. You was down with the AK. And now I see you on a video with Mitch and Lake looking like straight bozos.
Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip Hill and no S2H. Today we have with us special guest Dave Kalik is joining us. I'm Scott McNally. This program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES for some additional savings and to support the programs. Skip, we've got Dave Kalik.
Dave is sitting in. Is he going to be providing the racist comments for the segment for today? I don't. Dave's not a very racist kind of guy, so I don't
know. No, but I like to I like to offend all races.
Yes. Well, go after the Asians first, because you're married to one, right?
Yeah, okay, so I have an angry Asian wife, and
I'm going to make several Asian jokes then. Oh, how is your wife? Oh, maybe that's not Asian. That was more Chinese. I'm glad she doesn't watch.
Well, she's Korean, but, you know, I always joke around. Same thing, you know?
Exactly. So S2H can't be with us today. We brought in a heavy hitter, our heavy hitter, Dave Kalik. Dave, we just talked the other night about this. You're going to the Olympia, right?
Of course. Absolutely. We're going to miss it.
Skip, can we talk you into it?
Yeah, I go to the Arnold. That's a step up.
That is true.
I can't do both. If I'm going to go to Vegas, it's going to be to go pick up my drunk wife in a parking lot while she's passed out over a parking.
Hey, whatever stays in Vegas. I thought that was the whole topic.
Yeah, well, until she can't find her way back to, you know, the hotel or home for that matter.
Yes. I'm excited. I'm really pumped. I was considering not going, and then I decided, like, last minute, I was like, you know what? I got to do this. We do bodybuilding media here. It's like there's no excuse for me not to go. It's not like I have an excuse like, oh, I got to work my 9-to-5 job. I need to be there. So I'm going to go. And here's my thought, too, is that last big show we had, you know, the Arnold, I got to do a bunch of cool little videos throughout. Like, I got a chance to hang out with Dave. We did a little wrap-up after the Olympia, or I'm sorry, after the Arnold Classic. It was like Sunday morning. We went out for breakfast. We talked about the show and stuff like that on video. And I got to put all those shows up, all those little videos up all through the weekend. And a lot of people had commented that they really enjoyed that stuff because they didn't get a chance to go. And so my goal this year, one of my goals, I've got three of them set, and one of them is going to be to bring the Olympia experience to all the listeners and viewers that can't be there, so that, you know, I'm not necessarily going there to do like hard hitting show coverage, but if I get a chance to talk to some of the people that are part of the show, that would be freaking awesome. And I know there's going to be a ton of other people there that'll be really cool to talk to, including Dave. So that's the thing I'm going to be doing. Dave, what are your plans for the Olympia?
Well, speaking of my angry Asian wife, no, so she's a big Duran Duran fan, right? So okay. 5 days before, they're playing at the Cosmopolitan, so we're going to go out there early. You know, we have a house out there as well, so we're going to stay out there for the week. You know, she'll see the shows. And then on Thursday, we'll, you know, start heading over to the Strip area, you know, get a hotel there, and, you know, start doing the Olympia thing.
Nice.
And, you know, certainly I'm looking forward to prejudging. And, you know, for obvious reasons, this is a very interesting Mr. Olympia, you know. I'm very curious. I have some predictions, and it's interesting to see what comes to fruition here.
What do you think yep. overall, man? I mean, so our current Mr. Olympia, you know, he's obviously, he's not going to be there, it seems. out of the contenders we do have. Now, I did hear it sounded like Phil Heath might be making it. Is there? Have you guys heard that too?
No.
No, you don't think it's going
to
happen?
Well, I bet you'll make it to watch, but I don't.
Okay.
Be on the stage.
Okay. Had you heard anything about that, Skip?
Did you say watch or bracelet? Because I was confused. Oh, watch the show. My bad.
Watch the show.
There he goes. He's already getting skippy.
I gotta inject some of this shit when I can.
He's already getting being like Skip. Okay, that's cool.
I'm here for entertainment purposes only.
Sorry, okay. Dave. You're saying you're in Denver? You were in Denver the other day or the other week?
No, I mean, I was in Denver. I just, you know, recently, like a couple, I just don't get the sense that Phil will actually be in the contest.
Okay. Right on.
I would love if he was, but.
So out of everybody we do have lined up, what are you thinking?
I'll cut to the chase.
Yeah.
I'll cut to the chase. I mean, I love Brandon. He's got a great physique and, you know, taking nothing away, but let's reverse to last year. Rolly did take third. Ahead of Brandon. He was ahead of Brandon by 2 spots. And quite frankly, if Rolly comes in any remotely drier and leaner, it's a wrap. Just because it's just too much, you know. It is the Mr. Olympia. It's not saying, oh, we have to go with the mass monster, but you know what? I mean, again, if he pulls in a little bit more and if there's no film and God forbid his glutes come in a little bit more, you know, then I think he's hard to fuck with. I do. I think that he's just so overwhelming. He has enough, there's enough wow and there's enough, you know, it factor. If he comes in a little bit leaner and drier, then there's too many check marks, I think. And I think you'll see, you know, he won the People's Award, you know, I mean, it's true. Like, you know, maybe, I mean, he is certainly popular enough. Not that it's a popularity contest, but let's face it, you know, I mean, I think it's between him and Brandon. I think that, William is crazy looking. I just think a little too crowded looking. And I think just structurally, I don't know if he can house the Mr. Olympia title, you know?
Yeah.
I would say it's pretty much going to be a Rolly Brandon Curry show, my prediction. I just think that, and Rolly, I mean, Brandon's sick looking, of course, like that, but I don't know when he finally comes down and, I mean, will the legs, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's, I just don't think the legs have quite enough volume and sickness to complete the Mr. Olympia package. I don't know. Again, let's see what Rolly, if it's, to me, it's Rolly's show the rules to lose.
That's if he can pull it together, right? Because we've seen him up, we've seen him down.
True, but I think, I mean, he was off at the Arnold, there's no doubt. I have no doubt that he will be considerably better than the Arnold.
Yeah.
And I believe he's heard he needs to be, from what I understand, I've heard that he knows that he needs, you know, and I think you're going to see a more streamlined, lighter version of him, which would be fucking scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you make good points, because I think he's very clear. He should be. His camp should be clear. He should know that if he gets it right, that this title is likely his. Now, here's a question for you, Dave. I'll throw this at both of you. No matter who shows up, who wins, does the winner of the Olympia this year come away feeling Phil's not here, Sean's not here? Mm. Is it going to have – listen, I don't think anybody's going to – not take the win or be disappointed with the win, you know, being able to have their name on a very, very short list in the annals of, you know, professional bodybuilding. At the same time, though, do they walk away, maybe not walk away, but within a week or two, do they kind of start to assess psychologically and go, and, you know, the best of the best aren't here. Yeah,
an asterisk and by their name,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, well, you know, is it possible that they could feel that way? Or am I just not giving the rest of the field enough credit?
Well, I mean, it's still the cliche of it, but, you know, it's still the Super Bowl of bodybuilding, right? You know, when other playoff teams, if they don't make it, is it because they had, you know, excuse the analogy, like maybe they had too many injuries, and you know what I mean? So is it still the best there? You know, like, it's still the top, the most prestigious, you know, contest. And you know what? I mean, the way that the sport is quickly as going and, you know, social media, I still think it's huge. I think whoever What's kind of cool, though, is that, you know, I mean, it does give room for, again, there's no dominant, like, you know, pretty much, like last year, for example, it was, you know, Phil's show to lose, whatever, you know, but he had all those wins in a row. So it's going to take a while for, you know, for it to be like, will the win be as, you know, as exciting, you know, was when, like, let's say when Phil first won, or let's say when Dexter won it back, or, you know, when, you know, when, you know, what's his name won it back, when Jay won it back, whatever, like, you know, I think it's going to take a while for it to, you know, I mean, I think that there's like a top three guys, I think there's like, you know, let's say Brandon and Rolly, I think, but I think that there's, I hope the next year or two we'll see just more depth overall, if yeah. that's what you're asking. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And I think too, I mean, it would seem to, from a fan standpoint, listen, I don't get too excited. I'm going to be honest. I don't get too excited about the Olympia anymore because I find it, I don't want to say terribly predictable. It's just, to me, it's anticlimactic. You know, I like to see it because I like to be involved because I've been involved with it for years. But at the same time, you know, I could take it or leave it. If I have something else to do on a Saturday night, I'm going to do it and find out who won later. I do think from a fan's perspective this year, it has to be a little bit more exciting. Because there are names up there that are going to be fighting. And, you know, listen, it may not be. Obviously, Raleigh and Brandon are going to fight. But there's a lot of motherfuckers fighting, trying to be like, yeah, fuck Raleigh, fuck Brandon. Within their own camp, they're talking like, you know what? I'm going to show up and shock the world. I'm going to shock the world. You know, that type of shit. So I think a lot of people are probably training, you know, harder this year for the Olympia than they have for the years under the last few three or four wins that sure. Phil was winning. Sure. You know, the other thing to argue too is just, and I apologize for continuing, but I got one more point that I don't want to forget. We don't know that Phil's going to be back. We all want him back and he'll probably come back. But at the same time, nobody really knows that. So if he, you know, it very well could be that he's done. And I think if I were Raleigh or if I were, I don't know that I'd give a fuck. I'd just be preparing to win, hoping to win and putting it all together, trying to take it and be glad that I was able to etch my name on a plaque.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, no matter what, it's like, you know, you got to be like, all camps have to be gunning for it. I mean, it is a open show, right? Now that, you know, again, Phil not presumably not being there and Sean not being there, so it is open, you know, and you have to, you know, things are engraved in stone. So, I mean, I think you're right, Skip. I mean, there's an excitement in a different way because it's not, this one's not very predictable like the ones in the past. So there is that aspect of it. So, you know, I mean, I think that's the theme of what makes, what could make this one exciting is the fact that it is an open show.
Right. Yeah.
I will say this. I don't think that regardless of who else is in the field, you know, regardless of who else is coming, it's not a knock to them to say that I think it's a slight disappointment that, you know, that you've got Mr. Olympia isn't going to be there. You know, Sean Roden is not going to be there. So that has nothing to do with how good the rest of the guys are. I feel like that in itself is definitely a huge letdown, you know, that, you know, you could have a lot of other great competitors, but still, I mean, it's like you want to see the champ get knocked out if he's going to get beat. You know what I mean?
For sure. You want to see him like retain the title, like deservingly so, and or get knocked out, like, of course. So but, you know, in retrospect, yeah, that actually does take a lot of out of it, doesn't it?
I mean, I still want to look at it positively, but you've got that, and then you know, so I do think that to an extent that yes, there is an asterisk by the name of the winner, but you know, at the end of the day, listen, you know, a good Mr. Olympia, he's going to come back and he's going to do it again, right? He's going to come back.
And Sean hasn't done that. Let's be fair. I mean,
true.
Sean won. Once there are some people out there who think this is a one-off, he does have to come back and kind of prove that he can do it again. So, you know, I know if I were Raleigh or Brandon or anybody up there fighting, I may be looking at it that way too, going, this ain't necessarily Sean's show yet.
Yeah,
he took it last year and he needs to come back a couple times and continue to, you know, to reign or hold that title. It ain't his. It's just as much mine as it is his, that sort of thing.
And from the minute that they handed Sean the trophy last year, that's what that all of a sudden it was like, that was the storyline, was now the rest of the next following year. Is he going to be able to hold it? That's what I was waiting for up until now. So that's kind of a bummer. And of course, it's a bummer that Phil's not going to be there, because then, you know, you always have to ask yourself, you know, what would it have been? What about Dexter Jackson? What do you think, Dave? We haven't talked to you very much about him.
I just saw him in Tampa 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and so he won that. I had heard.
Yeah, honestly, he is the best I've seen him in 2 years.
Okay, that's saying a lot then.
Yeah, no, honestly, and I'm being serious. I felt that he had regained a lot of the volume in his legs.
Okay.
His muscle looked more vibrant. Just overall. I've seen him. Here's the deal. I've seen him more shredded. I've seen him bigger. But this is a really good combination. You know what I mean? It was a pretty hybrid look, which I haven't seen for a while. So, I mean, he's certainly a factor. I mean, I'm not. You know, we talked about Rolly, but you know what? I mean, if those two guys are off somehow, and if Dexter gets nastier than he was in Tampa, then it's also a good storyline too, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. What do you think about Dexter versus Brandon Curry?
I think that Brandon has more volume in his upper body. But I think Dexter does still have some aspects. I think Dexter still has some whistles and bells that Brandon does not have. And those would be evident and become dangerous to Brandon if Brandon is off some way.
Yeah.
Dexter really, really nails it, then you know what? He leaves both of those guys vulnerable. It's true.
Hey guys, we're going to take just a really quick pause here to thank our sponsor, because they are the one that is keeping the lights on for us after all. So thank you very much, TrueNutrition.com. And if you guys want to support what we are doing here, then you can shop with them. Our code is ADVICES. And with that code, you can get all of their amazing proteins, intro workouts, pre-workouts, amino acids, everything else. Just check the site out. And now we have a new code. And that code is ADVICESOATS. If you use that code, you will get 25% off. Yep, that's 25% off of any of their oatmeal blends. So you got to check the site out. It's recently been redesigned. You can order anything from quick oats to rolled oats to steel cut Irish oats. And you can get these things organic. Then from there, you can add their flavoring. And this is where it gets interesting. Natural snickerdoodle, oatmeal cookie, butter rum, all these things sound amazing. So I have a bunch of 1 pound bags that are on the way, including pancakes and syrup. I'm keeping one of those for myself. And with these 1 pound bags, I'm going to be giving them away as prizes on the show to thank all you guys for listening to the programs. And if you want to try this stuff out for yourself, then let me know what you think. And please use our code ADVICESOATS. It will get you a whole whopping 25% off, which is a hell of a deal. All right, guys, let's get back to Dave and Skip. What?
Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip Hill and Scott McNally. We've got special guest with us, Dave Kalik. My computer just died, so through the magic of editing, it's all going to come together. Let's back up for a minute, though. So we just got a chance to talk about the Olympia because, you know, we're bodybuilding nerds. So we of course, got on that topic and just ran with it. I do want to say, though, Dave Kalik, for anybody who doesn't know, contest prep coach out in Los Angeles, we've had a bunch of his clients on, everybody from, Dorian Haywood. We've had Adam Young. We've had, who else am I missing here that we've had on the show? We've had, I'm trying to think offhand because my brain's blanking thinking about the computers crashing and everything else.
I'd like to get Daniel Alexander on, my 212 guy, though.
Dude, he looks amazing.
Nice. Yeah, he's preparing for the Legion show again in November.
Okay.
So,
when did you have Adam on?
We had Adam on a while ago. We had Adam and Dave on together. He was getting ready. Was it before the Chicago Pro? I can't remember now. It was last year, yeah. Last season. Last season,
yep. And we had
Stan McQuay.
We had Dylan. Yeah, we had Stan on, right?
Yeah, we had Stan and, McQuay on.
You had Dylan on at one point too, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, we had Dylan on.
Yeah, we had Dylan on
still
this show.
I remember having Adam.
Yeah,
you probably brought Adam on one of your other less significant shows,
yes,
on Advices Radio.
Which here's my thought too. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do less one-on-one interviews. And when we have a great guest like Adam Young, I'm just going to bring him on this show so that we can all. Yeah, I feel like it would be a lot more entertaining.
Yeah, that,
you know,
and
what I mean?
Fucking know him. There's that too.
Do you? You know him?
Well, I mean, I know. Let's put it this way. I'm not. him and I aren't tight, but I mean, I know him from Armbrust and being around me. I've seen him come from, you know, nothing. He's young.
Yeah.
To, you know, something pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, I know him in that sense, but him and I aren't going to, you know, he's probably not going to call me to do brunch anytime soon, though it would be, you know, a good brunch because I know my brunches in Denver.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
So, Dave, thanks for being with us again, man. First of all, Olympia predictions, you know, we basically, you're saying though, just to wrap that up, you're saying Rolly is your call. That's what you think is going to happen.
Like, again, let's rehash a little bit again. So, you know, keep in mind, like, Rolly did place third last year. He did place ahead of Brandon. Now, you know, Rolly certainly has to be a hell of a lot better than he was at the Arnold earlier in the year. But if he is any remotely drier and or leaner compared to last year's Olympia, I believe it's a wrap. I believe he just has too much stuff going on. It's just too fucking crazy looking. And really, if he's a little bit lighter, God forbid he's a little more, you know, again, there's the dryness. If he has any more cosmetic hardness, glutes are carved out a little bit more, I think he's hard to fuck with. I think that'll be it. I do. Nothing against Brandon, like I said. Brandon's, you know, crazy, but again, he placed ahead of Brandon last year, and I just don't know if Brandon really has the overwhelmingly legs. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't know if Rolly is on, it's just too much. I think even just through quarter turns, you could bury everybody.
Let me ask you a question, Dave, and I need your honest opinion, seriously.
Sure.
Do you think, honestly, that you're a better prep coach than Grandma?
Well, keep in mind, he's not working Grandma.
Damn, did I fuck that up? Okay.
Yeah, no, he's not. He's not. But I still thought it was a good question.
Pay attention. Okay.
I still think it was a good question, though. I'd still like to pursue that one. That was an interesting question.
It's just too bad that I'm not well informed.
Let's just pit Dave against other prep coaches for the whole episode, make him uncomfortable.
Exactly. I respect the other coaches. You know, there's plenty of bread to go around.
Yeah.
We're live. I got you. Yeah. I say the same shit when the camera's on, Dave. Okay.
I know that. That's just good.
Those who I respect, you know this too. You know this about me. Those who I respect know that I respect them. If people don't know if I respect them, yeah, probably don't. And I'm not trying to sit over here being king shit or anything. That's not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is it's a big, giant sea of turds, and I don't have a lot of respect for a lot of people who don't deserve it, put it that way. And for the record, Dave, you know, I mean, I'll, you know, say, just in case there are any listeners out there who think I'm subtly taking a shot at Dave, Dave has all of my respect, been around forever, knows his shit, but it's a relatively short list that I'm not going to get into right now, because then somebody will be all pissy because I didn't include him in my list. I was not included on Skip's list. And then I got to lie and say, oh, I forgot you, dude. I meant to.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's just dive into some questions here. That'll generate some more conversation outside of the Olympia stuff, which, Dave, I can't wait to see you, by the way, man. It's going to be a freaking awesome weekend. I'm getting cool, in man. On Wednesday, and then I'm leaving immediately Sunday morning. So there's no like Sunday festivities for me, unfortunately, whatsoever. But I'm really thrilled that I'm going to be able to make it in. We've got a question from Matt Marshall. He says, Dave, what are some of the most common mistakes that you see people make during a contest prep?
That's a great question. Let me cut to the chase. Without a doubt, it's people worrying about the scale.
Mm.
Okay. Because, you know, I look at it this way. It's like, you know, I mean, like some people, they worry about their weight dropping. And it's like, I have a little expression, you know, sometimes, like, first of all, this goes back to off season, like, you know, sometimes the lighter you can be in off season, the heavier you can be on stage.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And that being said, I think people are very concerned when they see the scale drop. I mean, for the most part, I mean, let's be honest here. It's really, really hard to actually lose muscle tissue. I mean, if you're eating enough protein, there's enough calories, you're doing resistance training, there's anabolics and growth hormone, whatever, you know, you're not losing fucking muscle. Yeah. You know, you might be losing muscle volume, but you're not losing tissue. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we get messages as coaches, hey, man, the scale's dropping too much. I think I'm losing muscle. I'm like, all right, send pictures. If your glutes are still fat, you know what I mean? Like, more needs to come off. You know what I mean? It's just like, so I think if people focus on the scale, because you know what? It's like, first of all, like, you know, weights fluctuate. You know, you can, to me, it's like the leaner and the more shredded you get, the more of a springboard you could have when it comes to loading, you know?
Sure.
And it's like, I think people focus on the scale, and then there's this, you know, behind the back, oh, my scale's, you know, oh, I just want to let you know, man, I dropped 8 pounds, so I ate everything in sight for the last 2 days. It's like, fuck, you know? I mean, it's like, okay, so that segues into being honest with your coach. You know, there's calories in, calories out. And sometimes, you know, pitchers can come in and things are just not adding up. And then you know what's going on. Like, you know, there's maybe not compliance with foods and or cardio. And then eventually that comes to surface. And, you know, it's like, then you've got to backtrack and stuff. Be honest, like, you know, don't worry about the scale. Whatever needs to come off, probably, like, whatever pounds are coming off the scale is probably what's going to need to come off, you know. Excuse the expression, you're only as lean as your fattest body part. But you know what? I mean, it's like, this is, you know, you want extreme conditioning when you go up there.
Absolutely.
That's, we're talking about, you know, we work with national and pro competitors. You know, I hate to say it, but it's like, if your glutes ain't ripped and you're not carved out, like, you won't be in the first call. It's just very simple. And, you know, conditioning first. Volume can be, you know, again, you can make someone gain 20 pounds in a day, literally, through volumizing and stuff. So anyway, the biggest mistake, I think, is really just worrying about the scale. And, you know, I mean, just that and or resting on the laurels of, you know, being lean, you know, ahead of time. And, you know, you just, the biggest mistake, I think, is not complying with scheduled cardio, thinking you don't need it. And again, just, you know, freaking out about, you know, dropping weight. You know, again, to me, it's like, whatever's going to come off, you know, it's going to need to come off. So don't worry about it. You know, again, it's like, you know, someone sends pictures and they're still holding fat in certain areas. Well, you know, more needs to come off.
Yeah.
That's not a very sexy answer, but it's like, you know, skipping cardio, not being honest about skip cardio sessions.
But that just goes along with it. That would be the same as like diet too, you know, not being honest about, you know, cheating on the diet or, you know, basically making your, when somebody starts making their own decisions, that's where things start getting hairy, I think. Right. Is that where you're going with that?
Yeah, exactly. That's where I'm going with that. Like, let's say, you know, wake up in the middle of the night and going downstairs and destroying a fucking half a jar of almond butter, you know, you're not going to be in a caloric deficit that day.
Yeah.
Then there's catch up. Not only seeing it, we can see it. Like, I can see if, let's say, pitchers are coming in, you can see if there's fuck ups. You know, you can see it.
Yeah.
And then the person, yes, the individual, why lie to yourself? You know what I mean? So, I mean, you know, basically, it's like, it's complying, as you said, Scott. It's, you know, not doing, if there's a scheduled cheat meal, have a meal. It's not a cheat day.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
I think it's cute when people will kind of do their own thing and they go off and they have something to eat. And one of the first things they say when they come back is you show the pictures, or they post or email you the pictures, and they go on and on about how much tighter they are and how much better they look. And
right, like, exactly.
That's not your decision to make. That's my decision to make. You don't have a trained eye. You're trying to justify the mistake you just made. So I can't disagree, because I completely agree with you about the scale. I would say, here's how I would approach that. I would say, because there's a million different things that happen during a prep that are fucked up, but when you're working with somebody, and I think you touched on this, Dave, it's a lack of communication or a lack of trust. If you're working with someone, you should be working with someone because you trust them 100%. As Russ Allen says, and I like this, trust the process. If you don't, you shouldn't be working with that person. If you are not working with somebody, the biggest mistake is just not being honest with your assessment over the condition. And, you know, I have found, and I would ask you if you feel the same way, Dave, that the bigger bodybuilders, the supers, the really big heavies, and when I say really big heavies, short heavies that are 5'7", that sort of shit, 5'5", I think they struggle with whether it be scale weight or size, they struggle with getting leaner because they feel small. It's almost as if that armor of muscle that protects us daily, or we feel is so therapeutic to protect us from the outside world, begins to be metaphorically stripped away, and it leaves us feeling vulnerable or weak or something to that. So I think the bigger guys have a harder time with that than the little guys. I also think that that's why you see better conditioning in the light heavy and below than you do in heavy and supers. You want to win a super heavy and you don't have a great structure and a ton of muscle, just get fucking peeled. Because no one in that class is going to be peeled.
Exactly. The thing is, here's the deal. Like, you should always want to have extreme conditioning first. You know, like, you never want to fucking hear you weren't lean enough. You weren't trying. Like, that's the last thing you want to hear. You want to hear feedback from the judges. You need bigger legs or you need a bigger back. It shouldn't be about conditioning.
Right. I agree.
Huh? Because for the most part, I tell you what, if we're talking about national competitors, you go to the USA, you go to nationals, okay. If you look at the regression of callouts, you're generally speaking, you will see a regression in conditioning. Mm-hmm. For the most part, like Steve and Sandy, you know, when they're judging, okay, this guy's got shredded rip glute, this guy's shredded. Okay, now let's bring him out. Now size, shapes, you know, now all the other variables, and that's how it should be. You don't want it to be the other way around because, mm-hmm. Skip, you and I have seen, you go to the USA Nationals, you know, you see some huge guys walk around all puffed up, you know, walk around during the athletes, you know, like before they go in and weigh in and registration. And then I call it the gear with the headlights, caught in the headlights look when they come out.
Right.
And these guys will go back and weigh in. They get served a piece of humble pie because they're stripping down and they're seeing guys with like crazy shredded glutes and shredding. They're just like, oh, fuck, what the fuck did I get myself into? Right. And it's humbling, you know, because like, it's funny because, you know, when I grew up, you know, competing, and it's to this day, it's like, you know, the biggest guy in the room walking around in the clothes is not usually the guy you have to worry about. It's usually the motherfucker in the corner who's all shriveled up looking like he's dying. Because when that guy takes his fucking clothes off, you know what I mean? It's like, it's an illusion. Bodybuilding is an illusion. It doesn't, you know, the judges, I know it's all cliche sounding, but they don't have a scale when you're on stage. You know what I mean? They don't care. You're better off being fucking peeled to the bone. Because, you know, I mean, I speak to the judge. You know, they'd rather have somebody drier and shredded and slightly flat than like too much volume in a spill. I mean, they just seriously, and they will dock you, you know? So that being said, you know, Skip, it's just basically the thing is the biggest mistake an athlete can make. I can't reiterate more with Scott's. It's being honest. What Skip said, being honest with yourself. I mean, look at the people in the top five, look at people winning shows, look at yourself. Are you getting there? Are you conditioned enough? You know, if, you know, follow the plan. These are all cliche soundings, but as it is, trust the process. You know, I mean, it's you can only be, you got to be honest with yourself. You know, you can't blame anyone else but yourself. If you know that, fuck, hey, I did a third of the amount of cardio that I was supposed to do.
Mm.
I ate three. I made a cheat day out of a cheat meal.
Mm.
I went downstairs in the middle of the night and I ate half a jar of almond butter. Okay. Calories in, calories out. We're talking about being in a caloric deficit. And I hate using the expression like you got to be flat to get shredded. But you know what? You can't walk around all boomed up and jacked up and expect to lose body fat at a significant pace. You know?
That's right.
And it's a springboard. The leaner and more shredded you can get, the more sensitive you are for loading phase. Fuck, God forbid you're shredded and peeled to the bone. Your cheekbones are sticking out 10 days out. Where you can aggressively load harder and guess what? Gain more weight and be bigger on stage.
Yeah.
Right.
That's just how I look at it. So I know, Skipper, it's okay. Honesty and compliance. It all ties into this, you know, that's really what it is. Just follow the fucking plan. Jesus Christ.
No kidding. Right.
How about you, Skip? You got something outside of that you can think of that'd be worth throwing in? Mistakes most common made by people that are in contest prep.
Well, I mean, the list is so long. I don't know. I mean, I hate to say that. I don't want to sound like a dick about it, but I mean, honestly, this is like a 2-day. We could go two days on this shit nonstop without sleeping. There's just so many things. But I think that the points that we've touched on, as far as, you know, again, honest assessment and, you know, the scale and stuff, those are clearly at the top of the list. What'll happen is when we move on to another topic. I'm sure David and I'll think of something else. But
yeah.
Just because there's so many, oh, I wish I would have said that, or, oh, what about this?
Let's just do a show, fuck, just on
right,
that.
Jeez. Right, exactly. Yeah. That'll be the only topic for an hour and a half. Right. We could fill it. I know we could fill it.
Sure we can.
I know one guy I was talking to recently, he was telling me that he had had issues. And now I thought about it. I've worked with a couple guys that had issues with this too, that he had issues personally with Tren. And he said that using Tren, it threw him off and screwed up his prep, you know, because it just threw him off kilter. And then he ended up, you know, not feeling right, threw in the towel when he probably would have looked fantastic. And then after he said that, I started thinking about it. And I thought about two cases, people that I've worked with, you know, out of everybody I've worked with, this is only a couple times, guys that I think that may have been the same situation. Guys that were like right on point. Everything looked good. We weren't making any, I mean, obviously, yeah, when you're 6 weeks out, the diet's getting harder, right? I mean, you're getting into crunch time. There is more stress. But I'm talking people that looked like they could, you know, that they were right on track, that they were ahead of time. Then they started trend, and then they started having issues. And then one thing led to another. And then they just, you know, they couldn't handle it. One guy I know recently was telling me how he decided he wasn't going to use it this time around, that, you know, he learned from that mistake. So I don't know what that is in there as far as, you know, if that's a common mistake that people make, but I do feel like that maybe overdoing the gear can be one. I know that I've fallen into that. I don't know if I've ever undone myself or made myself worse for it, but I know that I've pushed things harder than I had to, you know what I mean? At times.
Especially a drug like Tren. I mean, let's, you know, we've talked about this. I mean, so, you know, progestin is a subdivision hormone of progesterone, and some people are very sensitive that way. And it's not about just lactating on your nipples.
Yeah.
Some people, I mean, when they have high progestin levels, it can have an indirect antagonistic effect on estradiol. So remember, Tren does not aromatize directly, but some people who are sensitive, it's just very counterproductive. You know what I mean? Like nandrolone steroids in general. I mean, you know, it's like when progestin comes up a little bit, I'm speaking progestin, not progesterone. This is the subdivision hormone of progesterone. When that level comes up, in most people, that actually can have an indirect, you know, lowering effect of estradiol. But in people who are sensitive, it can be very antagonistic. And I've seen people's estradiol levels go up indirectly because of Tren use, you know. And perhaps, you know, maybe you won't – it's not like you're going to go breast out of it, but at least what it can do is – it can definitely compromise the integrity of getting leaner if that's going on. You know what I mean? So some people are not candidates for Tren, or certainly, like, at the very least, should have a lower dosing protocol for Tren, you know?
Yeah.
And you're right, Scott. I mean, some people, one mistake is, how about this? Using too much gear, they won't listen to what's laid out for them, and they'll do three times the amount of what we're saying to do.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Fucking
funny. It's funny that you say that, because as soon as he started talking about Tren, I'm like, and there's too much gear, and there's too much Tren.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the other thing is just, I think being presumptive in the sense that I absolutely have to have Tren in there.
Right, right.
Who does a prep without Tren? Oh, my God.
Right, exactly. You know,
I used to get the same thing with Halitosin, and finally I wanted to choke myself out. Because I know I did the same thing years ago, and I remember thinking to myself, I just had my 26th wedding anniversary. My wife will tell you, I'm pretty easy to get along with during prep. I'm not an angel, but I'm pretty easy until the last couple weeks. And then it's just all the shit on my mind, making sure I'm not missing anything the last couple weeks, especially when you got kids and you're trying to, you know, keep everything together and all that sort of shit for planning. But the point is I don't lose my shit. I don't become a dick. But I'll have you know, Halitosin, and I do not do well. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't think that I'm really gaining that much. And this is just me personally. It doesn't mean that other people don't. But I remember thinking to myself, and this is 15 years ago probably, like, I'm going to leave it out, and I'm going to do this and this instead and make these couple changes. And I only do that to see how many people will email me and ask me what those changes were. But I thought, I want to leave it out. And there was no difference. And I remember thinking to myself, gee, awesome. Now I don't have to take what's arguably the most hepatotoxic oral man that's been made ever in the steroid world, when I really don't feel like I was gaining anything from it personally. It doesn't mean that other people don't, but I didn't. So that's the other part of it too, is knowing what you were, not just listening and doing what everybody else is doing or thinking that there are things that must be done. I have to do this. I have to do that. Figure out for yourself. Sometimes I understand that you don't have the background. People may not know what they can do and what they can't. But learn, take notes and, you know, assess these things and know maybe you just don't. Just like Dave was saying, there's some people who aren't going to. I don't think I respond terribly well to Trend Hex, yet I do respond very well to Trend Acetate. So there's a difference there as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was in the same camp, and I can't say I'm not totally out of it, Skip. That thought of Halo. Why take the risk, man? What, like, the idea of not taking it? There's that thought in my head 2 weeks out. Why take the risk of not taking it?
Yeah, you know? Exactly. You're you know? So close. And I think that's what people fall back on. I mean, it is the more, you know, it, when in doubt, as a bodybuilder, when in doubt, take more, train right. more, diet more, eat more.
Right, right. Know?
More cardio. It's just that, well, let's just make sure, because that close to a show, it's like, I don't want to fuck it up. I'd rather give up a little liver tissue. I heard they can grow that shit in a petri dish these days anyway, so right. What the hell. But it is, and being able to assess and experiment. I mean, part of this process, and I'll be honest with you, this is a prep guy saying this, so I, you know, I'm kind of, it probably sounds like a horrible business move. But when you don't have a prep guy, sometimes you learn more because you sit back and you assess more and you're more analytical when you work with someone. Most people who work with someone are doing two things. Number one, they're just executing. They're just following and executing, and they don't have to make decisions, and that's great. And I'm not knocking that. I make a good living doing what I'm doing. The other part, though, is they're working with someone to gain knowledge because, of course, they're a prep guy as well. So there's that. But when you have somebody else do or make those decisions for you, there can be less analyzing and assessment, potentially less learning about your own body moving forward, because you just tend to accept, well, so-and-so, they all do this. So I'm going to do this because it makes sense because everybody's doing it. And I don't even know that we give it much conscious thought, but just accept the fact that that's the case. When if you're not taking instruction from a bunch of different people, I think you would tend to assess and analyze more, I would think.
Yeah. If you could be honest with yourself.
Absolutely. And a very good point. That's very, very true. And not a lot of people can. So that's a very good point. I agree.
All right. Got another question here from Jake. He says, as coaches, which part of coaching do you enjoy more, off season or contest prep? What do you like or dislike about each part?
You know, to be honest, like, coaching is a passion for me. I'm able to, you know, I'm fortunate to have other businesses and some real estate and stuff like that. So I'm actually able to really enjoy this, what I'm doing. And to me, honestly, like, as far as enjoying, it gives me an opportunity to really enjoy, you know, not feel pressuring to have to, like, take on millions and trillions of clients. So for me, it becomes very more personal for me. Like I like to be able to talk to clients on the phone and get more hands on. So, I mean, as far as which phase, like, honestly, to me, you know, I'm think Skip might agree. It's like, I look at it as like, okay, it's all one big prep. You know what I mean? Like, to me, like, the off season, the success of the off season dictates how well the contest goes. You know, to me, it's like, okay, well, let's say it's, you know, I want to do the USA next year, and it's 11 months away. Do we do an off season? You know, to me, it's like, we have a contest date next year. So to me, the off season just overlaps into it's all one big prep. You know what I mean? But, you know, I mean, the idea is that it's fun. Both aspects are fun. I mean, both are challenging. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, they both are difficult in their own ways. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Off season is like, fuck, you have to, like, pound a lot of food. That's like, you know, you still have to, like, move foods around. You still have to stay ahead of adaptation, right? You have to make sure there's enough of a caloric surplus without getting the individual fat. You know, you have to still keep an eye on labs and estradiol and see what's going on with the person. Because to me, it's like, you know, if you go into prep fat with estradiols all over the place and your visceral fat storage and you have predisposed estrogen areas that are stubborn going to the prep, you're starting off kind of fucked, aren't you?
Yeah.
So to me, it's kind of like, you know, you want to, it's all tied in. I mean, I enjoy all aspects of it. I guess I just like to have them overlap, you know, and, you know, prep is different in a lot of ways because, you know, it's difficult in that way too, because you have to, you're in a caloric deficit, you know, there's cardio, you know, so there's just, they're hard in both ways, you know, and I guess what's fun or what I enjoy is having it all click together, you know, and keeping an eye on what I think is fun is making sure that the individual is keeping up their training intensity and doing the same kind of stuff. Basically, they were training the offseason as pre-contest. I mean, I think a mistake, I know I'm kind of going off topic a little bit, but, you know, some people, they say, okay, it's pre-contest time, so I'm just going to do tons of high volume, and, you know, you should stick to the bread and butter stuff that gave you that tissue in the first place. You know, your training style will dictate how your muscle looks on stage.
You're going back, really, to the. You're going back to our last question, I think. Mistakes that people make, but that's a good one. That's a good one.
Dance with the one that brought you. That's what Dante always said, and I think it became a, you know, kind of a, I don't say cliche, but it was a mantra, I guess, of transitioning during DC training from off season to prep. You know, it's funny that you say that about off season, and you look at it as one. Pretty much one phase or one overlapping the other, because I completely agree. In fact, one of the things that I like to do with potential clients who are looking to come on board with me is I will try hard to get them from the start to come on, not just for a prep or not just for an off season, but to try to come in so much so that I will entice with discounts for total, like, combining off season and prep.
Oh, yeah,
because
yeah.
I know it's just – as a prep, it's so much better, because, you know, you can take someone who comes to you for a prep and you can get them into great condition, and that's great. But I'm just going to be, you know, I'm being completely honest. And this is just me. I can't speak for anybody else. But if I have worked with you for any significant amount of time in the off season, from the first day of that prep, I got a pretty damn good idea about how your metabolism and your body responds, instead of having to take time into the prep to have to try to figure some of that stuff out.
Exactly.
So I'd encourage people, say, I'm not, you know, this isn't a sales pitch for Team Skip. This is anybody that you trust that you're going to work with. I strongly encourage, and this, it never happens this way. It hasn't from the beginning of time, because people want to, I hate to say it, but information from everyone as they possibly can and put it all together from 15 different people. But if you want the best results for you and you being a competitor and you being a bodybuilder, not business, not making money online training and everything else, get someone you trust and stick with them. Stay with them, because if they're good, they're going to learn your body and they're going to know how to transition you from off season to prep. And it's going to be a very seamless, especially once you get through one show. It's going to be a very effortless, seamless transition. Yeah. And it's just, you can improve so much easier that way. Because once you go and you work with someone else, they have to figure your ass out all over again. They don't know shit. They don't know your specific situation. It's not that they don't know shit, but they don't know your specific situation. They don't know what the last guy figured out over the course of 5 months, 10 months, 12 months, a year and a half.
I'd say personally, I like dieting people down more than I like the off season. I like the off season, but it's slower, and I start getting this feeling in my head, like, you know, I think, remember, Skip, we were talking about this the other week about, you know, not changing the diet. And I get this thought in my head, like, you know, you've got to have a good relationship with your client if you're not going to change the diet for 5 weeks, for 6 weeks, for 2 months, because sometimes you don't need to make a change, you know? And there's and what we were saying, Dave, was we were talking about how some coaches will just change the diet just to change it, just to keep the client feeling like they need them, really, you know? And there's times that you don't need to do that. So sometimes I almost feel bad. Like, I evaluate things and I'm like, man, things are going where they should. We don't really need to change anything right now, you know? So I get more satisfaction out of the contest prep, where things are faster paced and, you know, we can see the changes happening right in front of your eyes more quickly week to week. And there's that as a coach, I get more instant gratification out of it, I guess. But that big picture that you were talking about, when you help someone through a whole year, like I've got a good handful of people that I've been doing that with now, and it is so cool to see them, the changes they can make year to year, and then come in bigger and better. And I could tell to myself, like, I know that in a lot of these cases, it's like, if this guy had been doing this on his own and he had to take that learning curve on his own to do this stuff, he might not have been there this year. I mean, he could have, and I'm not saying I'm the only person that could have done it, but it's really satisfying to know that I had a hand in helping somebody achieve not only getting in shape, but making radical changes to their growth too.
Right. Yeah. Cause ultimately what it comes down to is, I mean, let's face it. I mean, it's a beauty. It's a subjective sport, right? It's a beauty pageant. I mean, meaning things are out of our hands sometimes when it comes down to contest time, that day of the show, right?
Yeah.
So what it comes down to is, like, that being said, it's the satisfying aspect of it is seeing the client improve from show to show, their body's just improving, you know, their package, you know what I mean? And it's like some people say, like, oh, my best package, you know, some people say, well, you know, the judges didn't see it that way, whatever. I mean, again, that's something out of our hands. So it's cool to see if the client's executing and seeing them progress, then that can't be taken away. You know, no one can take away the change made from show to show is really like, that's the control we have, you know?
But come on, Dave, I mean, let's be fair. Even when people bounce around, say from show to show and they work with different people, their best package is always the one that they just put on stage.
Or the one that, yeah.
Scott got me. He's like, yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking
about. Or the one they're about to next week. This is my best package yet.
Funny. And you look, and I like to sometimes, I like to be a dick and I like to compare pictures and go, yeah, there's really not a difference. No one else is going to.
Exactly.
You know, it's like they're feeding themselves and trying to justify. And I get it. I mean,
we are talking about a very delusional sport here. You know?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, some people like, I mean, let's face it. I think I know where you're going. I mean, like some people like, you know, when they say that they put that out there, it's kind of like a, what they're basically saying is like, they're trying to make themselves like knowing that they maybe have even regressed and like, no, it's true. I mean, it's true. And
the best prep guy is the one you are currently working with. He's the best prep guy ever. And then when you work with another one, well, then they'll be the best prep guy ever.
I'm looking at a question here from Jeff Gary. Now he posted a couple pictures too. I know you guys saw these pictures. Because this computer is having so many issues, I'm afraid to press too many buttons. I was going to post his pictures on the show. I'm not going to touch it. I'm just going to sit here and hold my breath. But he says, what can you do for deep cuts and separation? I can get pretty lean and dry with striated quads, but my legs are still blocky. Is it insane conditioning, specific training, genetics, or something else? So Dave, having seen his pictures, and I guess, you know, speaking in general to anybody who could be asking this question, what are, and I guess that's the thing, because we want to answer his question, but more so, this is a question that I think a lot of people are going to ask. What are the things that could be hindering somebody from having what he's talking about?
Well, okay, I mean, it's the obvious, moving away the obvious of not being conditioned enough.
Yeah.
You know, not seeing enough. Okay, here's the deal. So, you know, the fibrous relief to the muscle that you'll see or should, or lack thereof, you know, has to do primarily with, again, you know, how conditioned you are. But I mean, there's a genetic predisposition too. I mean, some people are just not, their tissue isn't fibrous that way. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about an elite gene pool, like, you know, people have the genetics, and it's going to come down to, I think, you know, let's say we're talking about legs. I mean, it's time under tension. A lot of guys are explosive on the way up, and they just, they bounce on the way down, or they're explosive on the way up, they rest on their knees, and they like come down real quick if they're doing a leg press or hack squat. So I think if you want to get more separation and more of a fibrous look to your muscle, it's about time under tension. It's about having a controlled negative. You know, when you're doing a leg press, you know, make sure you're controlling the negative on the way down. And when you push out, when you're exploding up, don't lock out on your knees and take the tension off your legs and rest. You know, keep continuous tension. You know, when you're going slow on the negative, like you feel like that fibrous twitching relief when you're controlling the weight on the way down. I mean, that'll exhibit itself. If you have that going on, that'll exhibit when you're dieting down. You'll see it. If you're just too, you know, moving the weight from point A to point B, you know, it's going to be more of a one-dimensional look to your tissue.
Okay.
Again, probably not the sexiest answer, but it's like a lot of times it's the training style. It's keeping tension underneath there. Some people they have a lot of surface. Okay, it's jumping around here a little bit. Some people have a lot of like cosmetic surface vascularity and all that stuff, but they don't have a lot of deep separation. Mm-hmm. You know, some bodybuilders are just they're just not lean enough when they go on stage. You know what I mean? Like a lot of times, especially when there's androgen abuse, you know, there's a lot of more visceral pockets of fat that don't easily go away and this and that. And, you know, if you don't lose that visceral fat, and you just, let's say some people have very low sub-Q fat, but they're not low in visceral fat. Fuck, you're just not going to see that separation in the shit you're talking about.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a very good point. You know, I've always said too, and I don't want to sound oversimplistic or, you know, again, cliche like Dave is saying, but, you know, the bigger your legs get, the more separation you're going to typically end up with through the larger any muscle is typically the, and even at the same leanness, you'll tend to end up with more separation or more detail. You know, another thing, and Dave touched on this, I think it's a something that a lot of people need to hear. And I'm going to relate it to glutes because sometimes I get tired of hearing everyone saying, oh yeah, he was shredded, he was in great shape, but his glutes weren't shredded. Sometimes you can be retardedly and ridiculous, and I say retardedly with a lack of political correctness because, you know, I don't mean to take offense to any retards, but or offend any retards. But the point is if you are sickly or retardedly lean and you don't have that look, where some people just aren't going to have that look, whether it's, you know, here's a better example, in fact, because it's less common. We've all seen a side tricep where that outer head of the tricep is just feathered like the outside of Jay Cutler's quad, okay? It doesn't happen very often, but you see it from these cats over in like Egypt and shit like that on occasion.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God, I got to get that lean. Obviously, you have to be lean to get detail like that. But if you put 100 outer triceps together in ridiculously lean condition, you might get one that's going to look like that, one or two. There is a, and this genetic. Is so important. It's such, there is a genetic issue here, just like there is with structure, just like there is with roundness, muscle insertion, everything. So that has to be taken into consideration too. Sometimes you're going to get shredded and you're just not going to have glutes that wow everybody or a feathered outer head of your tricep. You know, these type feathered out, sometimes your sweep may not be feathered either. Other people, and I'm going to use someone like, say, Victor Martinez, who isn't known for being shredded. He's been there. I get that. But what I'm saying is if you caliper his body fat when he's on stage at his prime, those calipers aren't going to be as thin as everybody might think they are. But because everything is so balanced and so pretty and put together well, it reminds me of Phil Heath when I competed against him for the first couple of years before he was really known. He wasn't the most shredded guy. He wasn't arguably the closest to being the most shredded guy on stage. But no one was going to touch this motherfucker because he was that pretty. Yeah. So there's just such a genetic component like there is with everything else. And it does play into leanness and what you look like when you're shredded. Sure.
So true. You know, I mean, some people have just, they don't have that fibrous look genetically. I mean, some people literally have, I mean, you know, some people have, you know, more fast, the fibers are just different. And if it's not, if you don't have it in the cards, I mean, again, it's like, you know, dieting, like Skip, perfectly accurate, you know, getting lean will show you, you know, it's going to come down to genetic predisposition, you know, ultimately, like, you know, all the drugs in the world can only, what they can only do is enhance what you have genetically. They can't create what you don't have genetically. Right. All this lean conditioning you can get as far as how lean your body fat can go, what you're going to see is only what your genetic predisposition is.
And here's a good point that I don't want anybody to lose this, like from the listeners. If there are 50, let's say there are 100 listeners right now, like we're up 99 more than usual, okay? There's 100 listeners, and if 100 of you are saying to yourself, oh, yeah, see, that's why when I get shredded. No, 99 of you ain't been shredded enough to really know what fucking shredded is. You say you've been shredded and you say you've been diced and you've hashtag diced and shreddy Kruger and all this type of shit, but you have not been there. You think you have, but you haven't. You have probably relative to you, but not relative to a lot of other people who fucking have no skin. Yeah. Zero skin.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Skip, don't you think a lot of this has to do with the yes men in the gym and their friends?
Sure. I mean, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, people are like, hey, because again, it goes back to the slice of humble pie serve where they go real, you know. Like some guys are like, you know, some people win, they'll qualify for nationals or USA, you know, somewhere. Because their friends are like, hey, man, you look like a pro. You could, you know, because they got some veins in their arms. I mean, honestly, like you should not be satisfied with your own conditioning unless you can. I'm using glutes. I always use glutes as a, you know, as the primary example. But you know, there's lean glutes. There's some feathering in the glutes. There's striated glutes, and then there's fucking cored out nasty glutes. You know what I mean? right? And it's like if you're talking about like okay, like I mean, again, I think this all ties back into our first question, doesn't it, guys?
Yeah.
right? With the biggest thing is honest assessment. I mean, be real. It's like, you know, it's hard to cliche again, you're looking in the mirror, but I mean, no pun intended, but you have to really look in the mirror and be like, do I have national level / pro level conditioning? If you're fucking doing an open show, you should want to have like pro level. It should be extreme. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do the shit, take the drugs, eat the food and do cardio and all this, fucking go for it. You know, like, why do it like half-ass? Because you know what? You're going to get, for the most part, what you put into it, you know, the effort you put into it is what you're going to get out. I mean, it's like, there's first call-out conditioning, there's second call-out conditioning, and there's third call-out conditioning.
I got another direction to swing this into. Okay. So, you know, and this is something that we talked about a lot, Skip. This is something, one of the things that I've learned a lot from you was the fact that I had a really hard time filling my legs out. In my situation, you know, and I'm not saying I had the biggest legs in the world, but you know, 6-8 weeks out, I had some pretty good separation and pretty good size. But the closer I get to the show and the more cardio I did and the harder I dieted, the harder I would deplete and the flatter, you know, the flatter my legs would get. The big thing for me is being able to keep them full. Because it's, you know, once they go flat, it's hard to bring them back. And it's they're the first thing on me to get really hard. And then they're the first thing on me to go flat and disappear, too. You know, so I can fill my upper body out and it can look good, you know, but then the legs have flattened out. It takes me, you know, I found like last year, I saw a picture of me two years ago when I was competing. I saw one of my old pictures in like my time hop. And it turned out that I had eaten two high days where I think in my carbs had been something like, I can't remember what it was, but it was low, like 60 or something. And then I went up to like 200, 300 or 400 or 500 day carb days in a row, plus three cheat meals. I can't remember what it was. No, I remember what it was. So I did one high carb day. It was like, I can't remember, 300, 400 carbs, which was a lot for me personally. Then the next day, the first half of the day, I did the same thing. And then the second half of the day, I did three cheat meals, like pancakes one meal, burger the next meal, you know, that kind of stuff all through the rest of that day. The next morning, my legs were freaking full again. It took a lot to get those legs to fill back out. And then the closer I get to the contest, the harder it is to get those to fill out. So I'd say that for someone like me, and maybe part of that is the fact that I maybe don't have the best genetics to begin with, you know, it whatever it is, though, I can play with it enough that I can get them to look full. I can have cuts in them, but I can also lose them too, you know. So I think that for me has been an issue of finding that balance.
Well, and something that stands out in what you said too is, you know, I'm being presumptive here, but if you're beating the shit out of your legs and they're that flat, yeah, get a different form of cardio. Get fucking pool and swim. I mean, do something that isn't maybe. I'm going to guess. Maybe you're doing the stairs and you're double stepping them, and all of a sudden, you know, it depends on the cardio for some people. I can't do a recumbent bike because it feels like someone's holding a fucking blowtorch on my quads for a maximum for like 2 minutes into it, and I can't fucking do it. Yeah. So there are some forms of cardio I think that are more intense and really can just bury people sometimes. If you can put that or disperse that work and get it off of your legs, if it's beating up your legs. And, you know, some people say, well, that's not very practical. I can't get into a pool. Well, listen, I don't know what the fucking best answer is for your situation, how practical it is. I'm giving you an answer that will help you. And if you can't fucking do it, then I guess you can't do it. But something like that is a
something
good example
else,
where if you're able to, exactly, something that isn't going to bury your legs like that.
Yeah. You know, it's true, because a lot of it has to do with like insertions. Like, some people can do stairs all day and their legs won't dissipate because of the way their legs are inserted. You know what I mean? Like, the legs are inserted. Some people have insertions where, like Skip, you're saying the bike tears them up. It's like, for sure. You know, and it's also like, I mean, one aspect of it is like, a lot of, I think with retaining, it has to do with recovery too. I mean, maybe like a good thing is, I mean, I like to try to position cardio where, let's say if it's leg day, like, you know, like not cardio and leg day. And then like, let's say the next day when you wake up and your legs are sore, that'd be a good time to not do cardio either, you know? Right. And it's just, it's positioning. Plus the fact that also from a metabolic standpoint, you know, sometimes like, as far as, okay, now time to load, sometimes like out of nowhere, I'm sure Skip, you've seen it too. Sometimes you introduce like some cheat meals or like high carb days out of nowhere. Sometimes like the first day or two afterwards, you person will actually appear flatter and be lighter in the scale because all of a sudden they're getting metabolically challenged.
Right.
So all of a sudden the conveyor belt is moving so fucking fast because these foods are introduced out of nowhere, where it's like, it's ironically like, it doesn't, the food won't stick to you because of that extreme out of nowhere elevation metabolically. So sometimes like you actually have to, like, as the show gets closer, provided that you're already in shape, you know, we're talking about like being lean and being shredded already, you know, a couple weeks out, as you should be, you know, don't want to play catch up at the end or chase conditioning at the end. Sometimes it's then to actually introduce like the refeed slowly so that your body, like, metabolically, like, you know,
I completely agree.
When you finally start loading, last week, it's like, it's not just going to make you sweaty and out of nowhere and accelerate stuff and you wake up like leaner the way a normal cheat meal should. Because, you know, cheat meal, for the most part, it shouldn't just be about, okay, it's a refeed. And I look at it like it's a way to activate the metabolism, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So you want to actually have those going so that when you do the last, when you are loading at the end, where the food can actually adhere to you, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny because you almost have to have not a selling point. I guess that's not the best way to put it, but you have to be able to get your, you know, get clients, if they don't know your protocol and know, you know, what you skip loading is a good example. But as an example, when you say to put, you know, you put in maybe more refeeds or more calories closer to a show, not a lot of people are going to buy into that unless they trust the process, because it's counterintuitive. They think, well, why am I eating more shit, you know, my more calories and loading more or refeeding more or higher carbs closer to the show? So you do have to be able, not necessarily to sell it. I hate to say, use the word sell it, but that's essentially what you're doing. You need to be able to explain to your clients what the fuck and why, so that they understand and it makes sense. Okay, and that's why I'm doing it. Okay, cool. But sometimes it's a hard sell. Especially, I think, too, when you have this antiquated and we're coming around to this. And you know what? I don't want to get off on a tangent, but I do want to ask you, Dave, if you've seen the same thing I have. And it's been developing more over the last couple of years, and that is what I call this antiquated torch. I want to be fucking tortured. I don't want refeeds. I don't want higher carbs. I just want to drive. I'm just going to fucking get in. I don't know if it's because everybody is demanding higher conditioning, because if that's the case, that's great. I have no problem with that. But I don't know where it's coming from, and it's almost like, well, I just want to be tortured. I just want to work myself in, I don't want to say into the ground, but work my ass off, and I feel like when I take higher carbs or I get a refeed or I get a cheat, that I don't need that psychologically, when in reality there are physical reasons, whether metabolic or to fill out, to be able to, you know, energize a couple of your workouts before you go back to being ridiculously depleted again, that sort of thing. Have you seen the same trend? Because I've seen it over the last couple of years, and it's a little – I understand things are cyclical and, you know, yeah, there's probably going to be a time where, you know, we're going to run through these trends just like there's training trends and everything else.
I mean, like, well, basically the thing is, like, when I explain to clients or my new clients, or is that right off the bat, I'm like, this prep's going to fucking be brutal. You know what I mean? Like, this is like the refeed is not a reward system, this and that. There's some people who have to go all the way through. I mean, keep in mind, though, this is leading up to a point. I mean, during the prep, there might be stretches of days where I'm strictly gluconeogenic, where it's just high protein and carbs, where we're getting a little glucose, you know, drip from being gluconeogenic, you know. Or there might be keto phases, you know. There might be carb cycling. So, I mean, again, I'm moving stuff around quite a bit where it's like 1 week sets up the tone for the next week, you know. So I just basically explain to people that, oh, they want to be, you know, be tortured or whatever. It's like I explain to them, it goes without saying that we're going to go for extreme conditioning. So it's going to stink.
Yeah,
you know, there's going to be depletion days. There's going to be carb cycling. There's going to be keto. I mean, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be brutal. The preps, I mean, if we're going for extreme conditioning, so to me, it's almost like it goes without saying that you're going to be.
Well, you would think it would be go. Yeah, you would think it would go without saying. That's why I just find it odd that people just tend to. I think it's just the psychological approach.
Sure.
You know, thinking, oh, if I get a cheat meal, then that's somehow. Maybe they don't see maybe they don't understand, or some type of, they're only putting a reward system with it, like you're saying, or a psychological break. And, you know, I know I've had to explain to clients before too, probably not as much as most, because people who work with me tend to know my philosophy around skip loading. But the point is, I still have to sometimes explain that this isn't about a break and for you to, you know, take
the day. Exactly. No, I totally agree. And you know, one step further, it's like, How about this? You know, if you give someone a cheat meal, and let's say there's a cheat meal, and the next day there's a high carb, you know, or a couple of days where there's, you know, more of a caloric, you know, surplus. Guess what? When you go back to those depletion days, it's going to fucking sting more and hurt more and be more brutal. And honestly, that's where like it's hard. If you notice, like the hard part is like it's the fucking day after the cheat meal because all of a sudden your shit's revving. And that's when you feel the sting of the prep.
Yeah.
But the same token, Skip, I'm sure you've heard this too. I just want to be tortured, put me through whatever. Okay, then all of a sudden there's cheat meals. I mean, all of a sudden there's depletion and phases like that. Sometimes you hear, oh man, this is like I'm dying. I'm like, oh.
The same guy.
Yeah, same guy is right. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, you know what it is. I mean, it's just.
Okay. We haven't had a repeat.
The original question that we started off with the first. You know.
All right. It's all coming back to that one.
Yes.
All right, I got one more over here. Hey there, I'd like to know how to set up an effective and safe rebound after a contest prep while keeping good condition and health in check. How to adjust calories, carbs, AAS. Note, I'm an endo, meso, and dieted on a skip-style diet. And he says that means high protein, moderate fats, and carbs only coming from veggies. With 1 to 2 day refeeds on weekends. Okay, I don't know if that's quite a skip style diet, other than the fact that he like sounds like he did a skip load for the 2 days.
I appreciate you noting because I'm thinking I don't know if my carbs only come from vegetables and I'm high protein, but you know
he might have meant that he did like longer refeeds. I think that's my guess. Well, is like
maybe he was referring to something I did during my because you know I put a lot of what I do personally out there. Maybe he's referring to something that may have been in one of my coach logs on Elite FTS.
So not a skip, maybe a Ken Hill diet, but not like a skip Hill diet.
certainly not a team skip type diet.
Right.
I don't have, you know, I don't have set parameters around things like that. But gosh, he's asking for the moon. I mean, it's a kind of an open-ended, very, you know, there's a lot of information there. I mean, how do I, you know, okay, coming off, he's talking about a rebound, coming off a show or off a cut phase, basically, you know, I'm assuming it's a cut phase or a show. Is that what he's saying?
Yeah.
You know, I AAS and that sort of, it's just too complicated. I don't know what he's doing, what he's not doing, whether he likes to come off cycle and go to TRT or if he cleans out and, you know, does PCT. I'm not a PCT guy, so that, I mean, that's just me. But there are people who need it, so there's that. You know, when it comes to reversing calories, I think something, there's a fine line, and I know I've heard Shelby talk about this before too, and we have a lot of the same philosophies on this. There's a fine line between not increasing your calories too much and then, of course, just becoming a pig. I think within the first week or two, you can have a pretty good rebound and you can fill out. A lot of that's going to go to glycogen and you're not going to hold much body fat. So I think that taking advantage of that week or two, and I say week or two because it's a big gray area depending on where you are metabolically, how big you are, or how depleted and beat down you were from dieting and, you know, where you were after the show. You shouldn't be too depleted because, you know, you then wouldn't be terribly full for the show. But anyway, everybody's different. So it depends on where you are. But I think if you can get through the first week or two and then decide from there based on visually and how much you gain, where to adjust from there, you know, it's tough. I don't know where his calories would be coming off of this cut phase. I know he gave some idea of the ratio of macros, and if it sounds like he's only getting carbs from vegetables, I would start by adding in legit carbs for that. But yeah. It's a difficult. I'm not trying to cop out on it. It's a difficult and very complicated.
So many variables.
It's almost like, you know, and I'm not trying to sound like a dick when I say it, but this is the type of situation where you go, that's where you have to work with somebody. I mean, if you want, you know, all that detail, I understand, and I'd be asking for it to, you know, if I was in this, I get it. But if there's so many complexities there and so many things that's where you get all that and you get all that detail specially formulated to your situation when you do work with someone and they know exactly what's going on instead of giving you these kind of hit or miss, you know, answers over the podcast.
You need history. You need, there's so many variables involved. Some people become estrogen, like some people have, you know, estradiol rebounds. Some people, like, there's so much going on, you know, it depends on, again, how lean they were, how sensitive they are to foods going. It's just, there's so many variables. I mean, it's very hard to answer that. I mean, we can give, you know, vague
right
answer, you know, but that is something that is highly individual. Mm-hmm. Because people die differently going into it. Some people are more metabolic. There's just so much, you know, again, we can't give you the sexiest of answers because of all the variables that Skip is saying. And it's just,
yeah. Well, I mean, that's a tough one.
Let's do this. Let's look at just some of the, let's speak in general, very general sense then. Not for him, but I mean, I guess, I mean, what are some thoughts? I mean, first of all, it's going to be just like the diet that you're going to, I mean, you try something and then you evaluate, right? So like you mentioned, Skip, first thing you do is you said you would add carbs. If he's not using carbs, that would be an option to potentially right. then start adding them back in. But I'm sure you're not going to add a shit ton of carbs, right? Let's say he's eating no carbs at all. And it's basically protein, maybe some fats. If you were to try to reintroduce carbs, how conservative would you want to go to start?
Well, I mean, let's just say he's real. I'll just throw out, and please, on the other end of this, anybody who's listening to this, understand that this is just a hypothetical, very vague, you know.
It's not a formula, right? It's not a formula.
Let's say the guy's 200 pounds. He's relatively lean. Maybe he's almost show ready. Well, say he got done with the show. What the fuck? Okay. He is going to stay on all of his gear just because there's one less variable you got to fuck with for me to give a more complicated answer. And you're running 300 grams of protein. You're running, you know, 50, 60 grams of fat. And only your vegetables are coming from carbs are coming from vegetables. And again, this is without me putting pen to paper or anything else, but I would immediately start with the fact that you're probably fucking pretty depleted. You're probably relatively flat. Metabolically, you could probably respond to easily a couple hundred, I would think, grams of carbs a day for 3-4 days and assess from there. Understand, and this is what I'm going to emphasize more than what to actually do and what I would do.
Yeah.
The name of this game is assessment and analyzing.
Okay. It's
to being able to honestly sit back and be able to assess what has happened. You could start with anything. You could start with 1,000 grams of carbs the first day if you wanted to. But the next day you better assess it, because if you go 3 or 4 days doing that, you might get ahead of yourself. But the point is this is a game of assessment. So if you only go, you know, 100 or 200, you probably do more than 200 grams. But if you go too small, you may not get much of a response, and you wait 3 or 4 days and you find that you're more hungry, because all of a sudden you've put in carbs, metabolically you've responded, and carbs will make you fucking hungry when it's not very many carbs and you had no carbs to begin with. So all of a sudden he's going to be ravenous and be like, oh my God, I must eat, that sort of shit. So, you know, I throw that number out just as an arbitrary number where you could start there and go from there. Maybe all of a sudden the next day he's maybe even lighter and he's more hungry, jump it up to 300. If it same happens, there's an assessment and then respond to that assessment and adjust from there. And that's that. Honestly, I feel like that's the best answer that I could give the guy.
I like that. That's kind of what I was getting at. There had to be something in there. Of course,
starting point.
Yeah. Anything else you had for that one, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, like, for example, like, I mean, I agree. It's got to be gradual, an assessment. Like, I mean, trying to look at everything in like 3 or 4 day increments and then reassess. I mean, if someone's been prepping on zero carbs, like only carbs coming from vegetables, well, they're probably going to have poor glucose tolerance levels. You know, I mean, you can't introduce a buttload of carbs out of nowhere like that. So, I can't agree more. You introduce a little bit, a couple hundred for someone like that is like 1,000 for someone else, you know?
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, they'll be so sensitive. Like, I mean, they'll be sensitive to carbs. It doesn't mean that they're tolerant of them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, there's sensitivity and sometimes they're not always one and the same. So for something like this, it has to be, you know, 3 or 4 days assess. I can't agree more. And then just take it from there. As far as sups, I mean, I'm not a big, PCT guy myself. I'm very much into TRT. Sometimes, depending on what level competitor, I mean, like, sometimes, like, for example, I mean, my open guys or 212 guys, we really want to take advantage of that window period after a show and have a androgen-induced rebound for maybe 4 or 5 weeks to take advantage of that window period and then go into TRT, you know?
Right.
But that's a whole another... Again, we can skip it. We can do a whole show on that, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm sure too. I mean, you're looking at safety, so I mean,
yeah. You don't want something to cancel. Okay, one thing is, far and foremost, what we don't want to see is, presumably there's diuretics, there's, you know, there's a rebound, there's a, you know, a, you know, you're sparing potassium, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, it's, you know, people eat everything in sight and pig out and gain 30 pounds and cankle out. And there's a tremendous cardiac stress with that, you know.
And you're screwed then. Exactly. You really can't really do a lot then. I wouldn't add the 200 carbs if you just gained 30 pounds, right?
That's the point. There's so many things there. Like when he came off of his show, if it was a show, did he eat like fucking crazy Saturday night, Sunday, Sunday? I mean, there are just a lot of unknown variables in there. And you're right. And it's such a vulnerable time for the body after show because your immune system is in a fucking toilet. It's just a terrible time. People get sick all the time. I got shingles back in 04 and I still have them to this, not shingles to this day, but I have the nerve PHN, the nerve damage. You see bronchitis a lot. You see a lot of fucking shit that knocks people on their ass.
Yeah,
for sure.
And people get all gear at that time. Probably not the best move.
People get the common cold. Like sometimes, like things that were laying dormant can come out.
Exactly.
Big shit out of nowhere.
And with stress, I can explain this because I've had to deal with this. It's funny how stress works, because stress, while you're maintaining it and you're in your stressful period in time, it doesn't tend to manifest until stress levels drop.
Right.
And then. Exactly, and that's where you get sick after the show, typically, versus before the show. You get shingles. It's not usually 2 weeks before the show. It's 2 weeks after the fucking show. It's that sort of thing, or bronchitis. It's a bizarre. There's some shift in, you know, whether it's probably a combination of everything, but cortisol and hormones and all these different, you know, and you just, that's where you get fucked.
Well, I appreciate you guys trying to do your best to answer that one. That's it. That's all the questions we've got. This is fun.
Yeah, look at your phone.
Let me see here. Was there something I missed? Because I wanted to ask you some other stuff, Dave. Oh, you know what? I did miss one, as a matter of fact. Oh, shit. Yeah, there was one more. This one was from Joshua Todd, regular listener of the programs. Sorry, Josh, I missed your question here. I've heard that Dave likes a lot of protein source diversity in his diets. Could he elaborate on the advantages that he sees in this versus simply hitting target macros per meal? On past shows, I recall Dave preferring multiple refeeds per week when utilizing a ketogenic diet. Would be interested in hearing context of the advantages he sees in this over a single refeed / high carb day every 7 to 10 days. Totally missed this one.
So for keto, I definitely don't do multiple refeeds during the week, because it wouldn't be, you know, surely wouldn't be keto. You know what I mean? And let's face it, then I'll skip around to the original stuff. I mean, you know, true keto is like, people are like, for the most part, when people go on quote unquote keto for, you know, prepping, it's really not going to be for the most part true keto. I mean, true keto would be like really low protein counts, very high fat counts. You know, we're talking about gluconeogenic / keto going back and forth. You know what I mean? That's really how it's going to be.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it depends. I mean, the refeed is going to be like when needed. And again, the refeed is not as used as a refeed. It would be to keep you somewhat glucose tolerant, because after a while, when you keep banging out gluconeogenic / keto patterns, you lose glucose tolerance levels. But anyway, as far as the proteins, so I'm very much not a meet your macros guy. I very much look at foods as tools, you know, like chicken, fish, grass-fed beef, you know, there's all different digestive rates and assimilation rates. And to me, proteins behave differently. There's different amino acid profiles, you know. To me, it's like, you know, if you just said, okay, we're going to get 300 grams of protein a day just from whey isolate, you would look like mush, you know. If you had 300 grams a day just from egg whites, you would look like mush, you know. I just think that for me, I've seen a lot of metabolic advantages. Sometimes I combine proteins in the same meal, you know what I mean? Like sometimes I'll pair, let's say, ground turkey with grass-fed beef, or I'll combine salmon with ground turkey. You know what I mean? Like I like to layer proteins together because, again, I think that there's different assimilation rates and different digestive rates. I've seen people have great metabolic reactions from this. I've also seen people become, when I use a variety of proteins, more nitrogen developing, you know, just more density and volume in the muscle, because I believe you know, there's different signatures of amino acids with these proteins. You know what I mean? I mean, fish digestively behaves differently than chicken. It's just different, you know? And I mean, I see it. To me, there needs to be variety. I mean, fats, like olive oil behaves differently than, you know, almond butter. I mean, omega-6s are different from omega-9s. Like there's, you know, polyunsaturated fats behave differently than regular. It's just, there's different. I look at them as tools, you know? So, I mean, I admit, like, my food patterns are kind of annoying because there is a lot of variety of foods, but it also gives me variables to move around. So, I mean, I've just seen also, I mean, for growing muscle, I've seen people, they seem to grow more when there's a combination of proteins, when proteins are overlapped, you know? It's all about essential fats and proteins. I mean, there's no such thing as an essential carb, you know what I mean? And so it's just like, I can't look at this meal as 40 grams of protein. I just like working with, you know, the different tools, proteins, you know, and I see a difference, you know? I see people tell me they're starving when proteins are combined, you know, like, let's say, you know, they're prepping, we start doing, you know, whatever, 4 ounces of ground turkey with ounces of grass.
You're a little off camera, Dave.
Okay. Yeah. And then let's say the next meal is 4 ounces of whitefish with, you know, 4 ounces of salmon. And it's just, then I'm hearing, then let's say a couple of days later, they'll say, man, I'm fucking hungrier 15 minutes after the meal than I was 15 minutes before the meal, just because of that metabolic acceleration, you know? Yeah. So it's kind of a pain in the ass to do, but I really look at, I'm very much the opposite of meet your macros. And I do see difference when proteins are combined and or there's a variety of proteins compared to just, you know, quote unquote, meeting your macros. I mean, otherwise, I mean, you are what you eat, excuse the cliche, but it's like, I just like working with a variety, you know? And to me, it's like, okay, 20 grams of fat for this, like, you know, to me, again, I'm using fast as an example. I know I'm very, you know, all over the place when I answer some of these questions, but I mean, I guess I'm kind of passionate about it. I mean, like olive oil, it's a very different fat compared to almond butter, you know? Sure. It's just, there's different reactions, you know?
Well, and there's a lot of different micronutrients too, exactly, that you're getting in, especially in a bodybuilding diet when, you know, I know myself, it's come down to 5 or 7 different foods with 90% of my clients, and I have to force them to get into this variety. And when you do that, right, with the protein, obviously the different amino acid profiles, I completely agree with you. At the same time, you're also getting different micronutrient profiles by forcing more food. Yeah. So it's huge. And especially in such a limited bodybuilder diet where you're going to see the same 5 to 7 foods, usually, especially because of meal prep, we tend to cook the same shit because it's easy to do day in and day out. I think you make a good point. And I'm going to throw in too, I protein combine. As an example, I don't do it consciously. Like today, eggs and bacon. Then I had cheese on my burger. So, yeah, I'm on the Dave Kalik protein combining diet. I was sweating. I was all metabolic and shit. I was like, yeah, Dave, bam.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like you can look, you know, you can look like chicken and rice, or you can look like grass. You know, you can look like a variety. To me, it's like, honestly, like, I mean, you are, to me, it's like, okay, this is in the trenches shit. This is not just like, I mean, I've seen it, like, I mean, for example, okay, I'm going to use, okay, ready? So, you know, Adam Young, he was a light heavyweight. We introduced higher proteins and protein combinations. He grew into a heavyweight. Dorian Haywood, same thing. He grew from it. Like, it's just, everybody I work with when I do this stuff, I just see him just fucking get bigger and grow and have more muscle density and volume. When there's varieties of protein and varieties of fats, and it just looks more of a 3D looking muscle. I mean, and there's more, as Skip is saying, look, I mean, there's more, you're also cross combining nutrients. I mean, there's like, think of like olive oil or whatever. There's, you're getting like, there's so many good aspects. I mean, there's so many good things going on. There's so much going on with all these different foods, you know? It's about nutrient density and combinations, and you know.
Yeah. The first time I heard you say that, Dave, was years ago now, and in an interview that you'd done with someone else. And I've seen that in my own life, the way, you know, if I were to stick with just one particular protein, that it gives me a different effect than if I were to say, you know, it just, and I found it's individual for each person too. You know, like some people are going to respond better to salmon than others, or, you know, some people can't eat beef. Some people, you know, they eat beef and absolutely. It messes their stomach up or whatever.
This is with working with and being adaptive and getting feedback from your person.
Yeah. 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 So it's not just like a formula that's one size fits all. You're saying
for example, let's say I'm just giving an example. Fuck. Let's say we're combining, you know, 93.7, 4 ounces of ground turkey with 4 ounces of grass fed beef, you know, 2.5 ounces of avocado and 3/4 of a cup of jasmine rice. Maybe that'll bloat the fuck out of you in the combination, you know what I mean? And then like right on, like hands on, we'll start moving things around. So there is no, it's very individual. Perfect, Scott. It is very individual. It has to be adaptive. The concept can be there, but you know, you need to have, you know, there has to be assessment and nothing's engraved in stone as you go along with that concept in mind.
What about if you eat a bag of dicks?
There you go. I guess foreskin. I guess you're going to get something out of that foreskin. You know?
Look, I'm just curious. I'm just curious. I don't know what's going to happen. I just wanted to know if you had that answer.
I got an off-topic question for you, Skip. Have you ever been to a Slayer concert?
No. But I am big on – see, I'm not big on concerts anyway. If I go to a concert, I get drugged there by my family, by either my kids or my wife. In the past, it's been, you know, we live by Red Rocks. So I took in quite a few concerts at Red Rocks because I lived fucking 5 minutes from Red Rocks. So we could come in the back way and then leave the back way while everybody's going down into Morrison. I'd be going up the canyon home. But anyway, nice. No, I'm an 80s guy, though. I'm a GNR. You know, AC/DC, Iron Maiden.
Because Dave could take you. Dave could take you to a Slayer concert. Well, or
I'd probably get, I don't know, I'd say beat up. I don't know. I'm not sure. Plus, everybody's probably drinking. I don't drink. I'm old. I'm as old as Dave.
When I talked to, so I guess I'm not. When I had Dorian on, Dorian Haywood and Dave were on, Dave didn't tell me the story. Dorian told me the story about how Dave got kicked out of a Slayer concert for being too rough.
No, that's good shit right there. That's the case. That's good shit.
So we're going to, you know, this is their farewell tour. And so I've already seen him 3 times this year on this tour. Yeah, I'm a geek. Call me a fucking geek. Call it a midlife crisis, whatever. But it's your last tour. And the next one's going to be November 20th in Las Vegas. And this will be my 57th Slayer show since 1990.
Holy cow.
And I admit, I actually have hearing issues from it because they play fucking unbelievably sickening loud.
Their
shows are designed for that. As a matter of fact, Tom Araya, the singer, bass player, the big reason why they're retiring is because the guy has no more fucking hearing. I met them last year at the meet and greet, and he has to like lean into you to hear like an old, like, and so anyway, the thing is that it's funny that Scott brought that up because at the Slayer show in Denver, my temper is way, way more managed than it used to be. Let's put it that way. I'm not proud to say I've had, you know, from years ago, I was on Halo, by the way. I was on Halo testing, but I had, you know, my right hand root tips and half of a tooth removed from my, you know, right knuckle. I'm not proud of that, but I managed to make my anger levels much better. But something happened to that show, and it was kind of a violent thing there for a minute, and I'm glad I wasn't arrested. I'm glad they just had me leave the show. I'll just leave it at that. But
what was the venue?
Well, the thing is, the problem with that venue was it was the outdoor venue.
Fiddlers?
Yeah, it was at Fiddlers. And okay. From what I hear, okay, that they're mostly like bluegrass shows. They don't do a lot of metal shows there.
They weren't ready for that, huh?
They weren't ready for that. And I've been to certain shows where, like, I mean, the early 90s shows were like, I mean, I'm talking about skinheads, long hairs. I mean, I'm talking about like kicking each other in the head. I'm talking about, I've seen some really sick fucking shows. I mean, I've seen people literally like have their faces caved into these shows, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been involved with like some of the things in the shows. And I guess at that venue, they just weren't ready for it. And, luckily, it's towards the end of the show, so I only missed 2 songs. That's how I look at it. I just missed 2 songs.
Yeah, right. Last time I was at Fiddler's, I had my entire family, all the girls, Tate, and we were all dressed up in cowboy hats because we were seeing Brad Paisley.
Right. So that's the kind of venue that they're normally used to.
Yeah, exactly.
It was interesting because at that venue, there was actually a decibel level that they have at that venue. So in other words, I mean, Slayer is fucking like it's insanely loud. Like when you see them, you know, they use these 800 series Marshall amps where they amp all that. They put it through the PA. Like they have a very specific way of doing their show where when you're when you're on the floor close, it literally feels like you're being kicked in the stomach, and you feel your guts churning. That's how loud they are when they play.
Wow.
I mean, like, yeah, it's crazy. And so for this venue, there was actually a decibel limit. So this whole thing was like, it just wasn't great for a Slayer show, but it was fun. We had a good show. It was fun.
Sounds fun. Yeah.
Well, that's about it. That's all we got. I just got a message from the girlfriend. She said hope all is going well and that my backdrop is on point. I'm in her room right now. This is actually her office right now. I'm in Canada. I didn't know if you guys knew that or not. I'm in Canada. I'm coming home Wednesday. I think I'm going to buy a computer literally on my, like, I'm going to stop at Best Buy and get a computer and put it in the car, drive home before I even like stop to pick up my dog from my mom's house. I think that's going to
happen. Probably a good idea.
Windows 95.
What's up?
Yeah, exactly. On your Apple 2GS.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to upgrade. I'm going to see if I can get like Windows 98 on the next one.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing you, Dave. You know, just a few weeks from now, really, out in Las Vegas, man. That's going to be fun. And, you know, Skip, as always, man, I always appreciate doing the show. This is always fun.
Well, if I don't see, because I won't see you guys in Vegas, but if you do happen to see my drunk whore wife and she's passed out over like a parking block in a parking lot, just pull her skirt down so nobody takes any pictures and puts them on the internet.
We'll do it.
Thanks.
Done. We're done.
Dave, where can people reach out to you if they want to get a hold of you?
Hey, guys, so if you want, you can message me. At Dave Kalik, you know, on Instagram or Facebook, Dave, K-A-L-I-C-K, or you can message me at yahoo.com, Dave Kalik, K-A-L-I-C-K at Yahoo. Thanks, guys.
Right on. We were talking about you on Skip. We were talking about you on Muscle Minds because we were talking about sleep patterns and chronotypes. Mm-hmm. And some people are they're genetically more wired to wake up in the morning, or some people are more genetically wired to stay up late. And that's why I texted you mid-show to ask you, because Scott speculated. He was like, I wonder if Skip has the chronotype to actually stay up late at night and be more productive that way. So,
is that true, Skip?
We were talking about this, my wife, Melissa, and I on the way to Michigan about how it really has been years, years and years. I mean, even when I had a regular job, I worked at night as much as I possibly. Back until, we've been married 26 years, we just had our 26th anniversary, back to the first couple years we were together. So it's been a long, long time. I just function better. But maybe it's just because of pattern and habit. I mean, that could be. I may not be wired that way, but maybe it's just the way that I have evolved because that's just, you know, what I prefer. I don't know. The only thing I don't like about what I do is I don't like when I wake up at 2 or 3 in the afternoon. Usually it's 3 right now and I go to bed at 6. Is I feel like I'm bombarded right away when I get up. Mm. My phone has already blown up. There's tons of shit. You know, my kids are hitting me. I got to hurry because I got to go pick up my daughter from school. She's got volleyball. I'm not sure. I got to hit my wife. There's all of a sudden, there's no slowly rolling into the day.
That's
like,
not good.
I think most people when they get up in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we're all like at 3 o'clock because we talked that other day. We're like, hey, Scott, you know, S2H wasn't going to be on the show. Let's talk about getting, you know, somebody to come on and maybe Dave, and we'll see if Dave's available. And you were like, let me just wake up for an hour. I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know what day it was. I did have a rough week because it was getting back home after being in Michigan and things like that. But so it all kind of ran together, but I'm back on track now. So I don't even remember. I had a lot of messages that I put off at that time. So if I responded to you, you a friend.
Right on.
Or a client.
One of the two. All right, guys. Well, let's get out of here for another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip Hill, no S2H. And we've got with us special guest Dave Kalick. I'm Scott McNally. Go to TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES. Go to TeamSkip.com for all of Skip's services. Of course, check out the Intense Muscle Message Board. Guys, we will see you soon. Thanks a lot, Dave. We appreciate it.
Man walking, psychopath talking. King of my jungle, just a gangster stalking. Living life like a firecracker, quick as my fuse. Vendetta's a death, that's the colors I choose. Red or blue, cuz of blood, it just don't matter. Sucker died for your life when my shotgun scatters. Colors. The gangs of L.A. will never die. Just multiply colors. Colors. Colors.
Advices Radio Network.